you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member, you'll know a thing or two about an expertly packed capsule wardrobe that balances business and leisure. So you can go from conference sleek to cocktail party chic with a few new accessories. You can hustle from 9 to 5 before exploring with ease from 5 to 9. Because you're the chief excursion officer. The Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card. If you travel, you know. Learn more at go.amex/business.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
Hi, I'm Eric.
And I'm Brittany.
And we are the Color Nerds. I just said the whole
thing. You just said the whole thing. All right. The conversations
that black people have
when white people are not in the room.
But we record them.
And we put them on the internet.
For all of you.
Yes.
So, we're back at it again.
You guys don't know that. What happened is that for a second time this year, 2016, I started recording and I didn't have Eric on the right mic coming through. You know, input, output, whatever, technical, mumbo, jumbo.
You know, I really feel like this is like a subconscious choice. Like this is
I'm trying to silence you.
You are. Erasure.
So now we had to start over again. But Eric was just recapping his honeymoon.
Yes. So when my wife and I got married about a year ago, if you listen to the show, you already know, we never took a honeymoon. She was pregnant. We had baby on the way.
Yep.
And we wanted to be able to drink and turn up, you know.
Yeah, I
literally
can't.
Twerk on the balcony of a boat.
I know. I saw videos of it. It's interesting because when you were twerking, you were still wearing like an outfit you wore to work.
Yeah, I mean.
It was so confusing to me. I was like, even on vacation, like, why? You have on a collared shirt. You have a collared shirt on.
That was summer wear collared shirts. Like, there's different, you know, there's a difference. You wear lighter fabrics. You wear, you know,
like a linen. Loose. You weren't even wearing a linen, though. Wearing like a regular cotton.
I brought out the seersucker later in the week.
Okay. Anyway.
But yeah, so we had never taken a honeymoon, so we decided to take a honeymoon. Went on this amazing cruise for like 7 days.
Damn.
Literally went to like paradise every single time. I texted you. I was in paradise.
I know. I got all these photos. I was like, damn.
Yeah.
I was in D.C. trying not to get pissed on.
Yeah, we literally were in amazing weather, and now I'm back in the shit.
It's terrible. Weather here fucking sucks.
Yeah.
And I, as I had said previously in our lost tape, that I really almost started personal drama with everybody in my life this week just because I woke up in a fucking shitty mood every day.
Yeah.
But you know what? God saw to it that I found some salvation this week. And you know what? I had some mind clearing personal time this week, and I feel a lot better.
I'm glad. I'm really glad. I'm happy.
Yeah.
I'm happy for you.
I'm happy for you. You had a beautiful vacation with your wife.
Yeah.
Without the baby.
Yeah, that was nice. It was. I mean, it's weird to be like, man, I really had so much fun without my child.
No, it's
but
not. My mama would not say that.
But I mean, it's just strange. I mean, I haven't had the opportunity to really say that before, but but true. I did, and you know, I appreciate her more now.
Yeah. I mean, she's amazing. Like I babysat her a couple weeks ago. We had so much fun. She did try to eat some paper towels, so I had to do the like
she's
the
big on that.
Crazy adult thing and like stick my gigantic fingers in her mouth and make sure she didn't choke to death.
Yeah, she knows the deal.
Yeah, she did. She was like, wah! And I was like, no, you fucked up. You need to, you gotta chill. You gotta hold your horses. You can't be eating paper towel.
Yeah. She's an amazing child, amazing kid. She doesn't give us any problems, but it's also just like you don't realize that, oh, I've really spent 90% of my time not working with this like little person
mm-hmm.
who is like functionally insane because she doesn't really know much. But
no, she can't communicate.
Yeah, she can't communicate. So, but yeah, I mean, it was nice to like step back from that and just like breathe and relax and take in.
Yeah, personal time. It's nice, like having, you know, I understand, you know, if you don't really get that one-on-one time with your partner, it's like when you get to go on vacation.
Yeah, it's great.
I'm really happy. Honestly, you know what, in general, I'd say like, you got a new job, Carla got a new job, Peanut got a new job.
Yeah.
And you guys went on your honeymoon, like, honestly, like, you know, I'd say your overall aura is the most peaceful I've ever known it to be.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm in a good place.
You really are. It's actually miraculous. Especially like after last year where every time I saw you, I was like, I think I'm going to get cursed out. Like, I don't know what I've done. I'm just pretty sure I'm about to get cursed out.
Yeah, I'm the most chill I've ever been.
Ever. Y'all don't understand. Ever.
I'm generally a pretty wound person. Like, even when I was
and
more
I'm wound
reckless,
up and you're still like... Like, it's too much.
Yeah, it's nice, man. It's nice.
It's nice, too. I agree. I think it's nice.
Well, you just have to recognize you can step back. Sometimes when things come together in a way that you feel comfortable about, like you say, like, you know, Kyle's got a new gig. I've got a new gig. Like, I feel like we're in a good groove with the show.
Yeah.
You know, we just have vacation. Like, everything, I feel like everything is in a good place. It allows me to, like... That's me to kind of step back.
I mean, you've been working really hard the past, like, year and a half. It's been, I'd say, actually, for both of us, the past year and a half has been, like,
a really serious grind.
I'm really glad. I'm glad that you had some time. I'm about to take a vacation myself very soon.
Excited for that.
Going to Puerto Rico for 8 fucking days. I'm going to just, you know, open my arms to the sun. I haven't been to a beach not in Massachusetts since in 5 years.
Yeah.
I'm just going to be so happy to just not look at, like, human feces on the ground.
Well, you never know.
That's true. That is
crazy
true.
Crazy people everywhere.
There are crazy people everywhere.
But we shouldn't take too much time.
Yeah, we shouldn't
like,
take too much time.
This shit is about to be
long. It's actually good that we started off talking about your honeymoon.
Honeymoon, yes.
Because today's episode, I mean, it's about Lemonade.
Yes. It focuses on what happens after the honeymoon.
After the honeymoon. So for those of you who are hearing this from a different galaxy, and even I think if you're listening to this in another galaxy, you've certainly heard of Beyonce, Giselle Knowles Carter. Yeah, so if you really just have been under a rock, even if you don't like this woman, even if you don't like television, even if you don't like music, you've heard of Lemonade. Beyonce dropped it April 23rd. It was bananas. It's like, I'd say her best, most ambitious work to date.
Definitely. Definitely. Easily.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, like, across the board, it's, like, incredible. I was made to go out that night. Mm-hmm. I wanted to stay home and watch Lemonade and then go out. But, you know, God had other plans, so I had to leave the house. But, you know me, I, like, went, I put title in my phone because I was like, I need to be, got to be ready at any point in time.
Yeah.
It came out, at least on the East Coast, at 9 p.m., premiered. I was out in the streets. I had to continue my evening out. Came home at 4 o'clock in the morning. And I was like, we're going to hold hands and cry to this Beyonce. 4 o'clock in the morning.
Damn.
Surprise. And I really did. I cried about it. I tweeted about it for another hour after it was over in the middle of the night. Nobody was on Twitter. Nobody cared what I thought. Slept for 3 hours. You know, did that little open my eyes. Oh, is it morning? What time is it? Oh, Lemonade came out. Let me stay awake. I've been sleeping for 3 hours. Let me wake back up, see what Beyonce had to give me. Watch it again by myself, crying. Literally, I watched it on my phone with my work, big-ass work headphones on, curled up in the corner of my bed, like, sobbing so that I wouldn't disturb my bedmate. And I was just doing, I was just doing the actual most. And then I talked about it all day long.
I mean, you wrote about it, too. And I'm excited because this is a significant moment.
Yeah.
In that this is the first time one of us is actually in the show notes.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
but you wrote about it
as well. I mean, and honestly, what also is weird, like in terms of Lemonade. So I was on my honeymoon.
Yeah.
If you saw like our tweet, like it was like, nah, you're not going to get a Lemonade
episode. Yeah, we're going to get a Lemonade episode for a long time. Yeah. Because on his honeymoon, funnily enough.
Like, so Lemonade came out and Carla was obviously like, yo, we should watch it. And I was like, I really want to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
So we paid for the like premium Wi-Fi. It was literally $100.
Yeah.
We paid for that. I mean, it's for the whole week, but not for like a day. Like that premium Wi-Fi, I was able to get our group text like 2 5-second videos of like Carl and I like twerking on the balcony.
That was, yeah.
And y'all didn't hear from me again till like, what, Friday?
No.
Because it was so bad. So like, you just couldn't there's no way we were going to be able to download an hour-long video. It just wasn't working like that. But I made it back, and you know, your article in Refinery 29 was actually the first one I read.
Really?
It was really good.
Thank you.
It was really good. Really, really impressed. I will say, you know, I mean, obviously I know that you're a supremely intelligent person. Like, you do the show together. And, you know, I mean, contrary to what you say every day and like our interaction.
I know, most of the time I really don't talk about shit. I really don't.
But I was like, oh shit. Like, Brittany came with it. You really came with it.
Man,
in the article. You know,
God was speaking through me. I had a lot of my spirit, okay?
I finally got a chance to watch it. I was like, fuck. It was amazing. I was shocked. I didn't really anticipate it being as cohesive as it was, because she's kind of done visual album stuff before.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, they were just literally just a different video
for every single song.
But this was very different than that. It made me, like, literally in each segment felt extremely important. Mm-hmm. And they were all still very, like, easily tied together. It was just really, really fucking well done.
Really, truly, and honestly, I don't think anybody has really put together such a cohesive musical statement.
You think about the movies, the musical movies that you like, know and love.
Yeah.
And like, I think back to, obviously, there's like Purple Rain, Rest in
Peace. Yeah. Prince, yeah.
But also like Moonwalker.
I was going to say Moonwalker, yeah.
And Moonwalker, like, it's a lot.
It's a lot.
Like, he tried to do a lot. He's super ambitious.
But
it was very disjointed. And, like, some segments I just choose to forget. Like, when he turned into Carr and shit.
But, you know, that's Michael Jackson being Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
You know?
Again, I would definitely agree. Like, this was the most successful, like, musical film, I think, that I've seen. Partly because she did remove some of the elements that, like, where other people really, like, trip up. Like, there wasn't a plot or dialogue.
Thank God.
Yeah.
She didn't attempt to, like, do... She stayed in her lane.
Yeah.
And she found people that helped, like, amplify what she already was kind of good at, and people who, like, are really good at the things that she doesn't know anything about.
Yeah.
And she was like, let's make something as good as it can possibly be.
Yeah. And it was just, I mean, it was shot so well. Colors, like the whole palette. She had a great... They had a great DP... Literally, and I think they probably used a few.
They used a few people,
But yeah, it was just really.
And the art direction really was incredible. Like, everything was just incredible.
Yeah.
And you could tell that there were different. She had worked with different people for different segments because you were getting like wildly different visuals, but it still felt like an entire piece in and of itself. And the music itself was great.
You know, I haven't always been the biggest Beyonce fan. I'm still not. I still wouldn't call myself like the biggest Beyonce fan.
Yeah.
I mean, I very much respect what she does, and I appreciate like the vast majority of her music and her impact and like symbolism.
Yeah.
But this was the first album from her that on first listen, I was like, oh, I really, really, really like this. You know what I'm saying? Like, even Four, like now, Four is probably my favorite. Like, I think very different for a lot of people. But Four is probably my favorite album of hers. But it still didn't have me the whole way through. But, like, this had me the whole way through. Like, the production, the writing, like, it's just expertly fucking done. It's very different. It sounds different.
And all the songs sound different.
Yeah.
Like, she tried something different on almost every single track.
I would have never said, if someone had ever said, describe a Beyonce album to me, like, this would have never been in my mind as something she would do.
What's your favorite song?
Don't Hurt Yourself is really good.
That song is incredible. Incredible.
But I actually think it's Daddy Lessons.
I was going to say, I go through, like, phases where which one is my favorite. Daddy Lessons is one that I listen to every single day. It's so beautiful. It's such a beautiful song.
Gorgeous song. Like, and then, folks have called it, like, a hard country song, which, to me, like, I hear that, but I don't
Have you seen the Dixie Chicks cover of it?
No.
They covered it live, like, maybe, like, a week after Lemonade came out. It was beautiful. So, full disclosure, sorry to just put my sister's business out there. My younger sister, Tiffany, when we were growing up, country was her favorite.
Really?
Genre, yeah. So I grew up, we shared a bedroom, we shared television, so I grew up watching a lot of CMT. Trisha Yearwood, Garth Brooks, like, so even just like major people, but also like Faith Hill, Dixie Chicks was a huge one for us, Shania Twain. Country was huge for me when I was a kid. And so, like, as soon as I heard Day Lessons, I was like, this is like, it was even more of a country song than a lot of pop country.
Interesting. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I have a different relationship with country. Like, my grandfather growing up was like, I mean, he only watched CMT. Mm-hmm. Like, he only really watched CMT. And it was one of the things, like, where I was so young and I was, when I was discovering music, I was discovering, like, the music I was handed down to mm-hmm. me, like, from my sister. Mm-hmm. So I very much was like, that's, like, old people. Yeah. Like, old Southern black people.
A lot of people don't know old Southern black people love
really
country.
Really love country, yeah. So I was, like, always, I kind of never really got, like, too into it. Mm-hmm. You know, I heard, like, some Dixie Chick stuff that I really mm-hmm. liked. And
those,
like,
girls, I would, like, pay money to go see them, yeah. honestly.
And, like, some of the people who, like, cross over and who probably, like, in the middle between pop and country. Mm-hmm. But it was never anything that I've honestly really had a strong affinity for. Mm. But this was just, I mean, it's just an awesome song. It's a beautiful song.
Beautiful song. I also thought so much of the conversation after the album came out, because she collaborated with Father John Misty, and she, like, you know, she interpolated, like, melodies from the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, mm-hmm. and obviously also Soulja Boy, but that's not what I'm getting at. But, and, you know, I'd say specifically the use of Jack White and her recording of a country song. Some people were like, oh, Beyonce's doing country? And I'm like, she's a black woman from Texas. What is, like, who is more qualified? Yeah, there's nothing strange about that to me at all. And also, like, a lot of people were like, oh, there's, you know, the strong Jack White influence on Don't Hurt Yourself or whatever. What is more rock and roll than a black woman singing about getting cheated on? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I liked that she was reclaiming all these genres that people attribute to white men.
Interesting. I hadn't really thought about it like that. I mean, I definitely thought it was clear that she was kind of expanding the way that she expresses herself musically in mm-hmm. terms of those genres. I mean, I hadn't really thought about it like that.
Really interesting.
That was well done. But yeah, like, I just felt like she was... I feel like she was finally like, yo, I want to touch a little bit of everything, mm-hmm. you know? Like, she's always done these really, it's tough to say cohesive, because that makes it seem like this album is disjointed, which it's not.
No.
But she's always done these relatively, like, focused mm-hmm. and specific albums where there's a through line sonically, like the rhythm or the melody, like, there's something consistent between, like.
Like the tracks and the style, yeah.
And... I've kind of appreciated that, because, like, in the case of Four, it was very, like, poppy.
Yeah.
Like, it was very poppy, very, like, R&B. And then with, like, Beyonce, these are the two that I'm probably the most familiar with. Mm-hmm. And then with the self-titled album, it was very dark, almost kind of, like, smooth in places. Yeah. Like, it wasn't, like, a very, there wasn't a lot of, like, peaks in terms
yeah.
of, you know.
No, I know what you're saying. Like, there was a lot there. Like, I thought it was... really well done, and there were parts where I felt a lot of emotionality from her, but there was not that raw.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? I've seen her in live performances be extremely raw.
Yeah.
It doesn't always make it to the album.
Yeah.
And I felt that definitely made it into this album.
She was like, let's put a little more feeling into, like, every single song. Like, even the ones where it was kind of like intentional step back, like Love Drought. Yeah. Even that, it's kind of like airy. There's a lot of, like, almost ambient sounds in the background. Dude, like, there's so much feeling throughout the whole album. It's like, it's really intense. It's how people describe listening to an Adele album. I know you're very rarely moved, but
I am
but it's an emotional experience listening to every single one of these tracks.
Mm. Yeah, no, I would agree. I definitely would agree. The thing about the album, though, that I found really interesting is that, so it's presented, obviously, as a film.
Yes.
If you, like, so I watched the film first, mm-hmm. and... my dumbass, I'm paying $20 a month for fucking Tidal. The interesting thing about the interesting thing to me about the music is that, like, when you listen to the album, it's this pretty straightforward Beyonce album. Like, if you just listen to the songs, you know, they're really beautiful, they're really exciting, it's well done. But there's not necessarily, it's not like you could sit down and listen to the, like, from beginning to end and hear, just with the songs, this entire narrative. The narrative came from the visuals.
I don't know that I would say that. Like, I hear it now. I wish I would have listened to, I wish I would have listened to first in, like, a different order.
Yeah.
But having watched the visual album mm-hmm. and then listened to the album itself mm-hmm. musically, the musical album.
Yeah.
I can't separate the two now because of the fact, like, even the stuff where it's not explicitly talking about infidelity, like, it's just tied so, like, to me it was tied so well with the visual album. that's in the back of my head informing how we got here.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, no, so I spent a lot of time, like, I watched the film a lot at first, but then also, like, my in between the first time I watched, the first two times I watched it, mm-hmm. I listened to the album, and I was like, this is, like, I get it. But also, like, this as an album, to me, like especially without the interludes, she had these really beautiful interludes of poetry in the film, in between each song, as the film was moving from scene to scene, movement to movement. And that put so much context in as far as, like, this is explicitly about infidelity, that, like, when you listen to the album without any, like, you're kind of moving from song to song, and there is some narrative, but, like, it's not quite as overt as it is when, like the visuals, they just make, keep doing this Birdman clap, and, like, I don't know what it's,
I always associate with Stevie J.
But yeah, no, the visuals, like, I mean, they, like, if you could listen to the album and be like, oh, it's kind of about cheating. The visuals to me are what make it be like, this is about infidelity within a marriage.
Yeah. And what happens.
And what happens. Yeah.
All of it.
But yeah, I mean, you saw it more recently than I have.
Yeah. I mean, I saw it more recently and I watched it this morning again.
Oh, you did? I'm curious. Like, I know that, like, to me, it was, like, really black. It was really about black women.
Yeah.
And by the time this will have come out, like, I already will have covered, I'll spoken with a black woman on Sampler, which is going to be, it's a great episode. Y'all should listen to it. But I was, like, I found myself, I knew that you and I were going to talk about it regardless. Yeah. I found myself really curious how the images struck you as a black man. Because, like, it's something that you're very close to, very, like, you know, being a black man in general, but also being married, having a sister.
Yeah.
And having a daughter, like having three very close. And also, like, I know you.
Yeah.
Many of your close friendships, your closest friendships are with women.
Yeah.
So, like, you're close to us, but you don't have that first person viewpoint. So I'm really curious how the images struck you.
Well, you're right. I definitely come from, I was raised in a single parent home, my mom and, with my mom and my sister.
Uh-huh.
And then, even then, every summer we were going to, you know, what I call my grandmother's house, even though my grandfather was there most of the time until he passed. And we would hang out with my grandmother and my aunt and whatever cousins, who else came through. But most of those were black women.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent majority of my time growing up was spent with black women.
Mm-hmm.
So this felt extremely familiar, but also kind of, like, in a weird way clarifying, in the sense that, you know, as a kid growing up, you hear things, you know what I'm saying? You're always listening.
Yeah.
And you hear your mom, you know, talking to people, maybe family or friends on the phone. You go home, it's like family, like, you hear everything, but you don't understand. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you're just in the mix. So it's really, you know, it's always really interesting to me now to be, like you said, to be a black man who is married to a black woman, comes from black women.
Yeah.
And who has a daughter, you know, who will be a black woman.
Yeah.
I'm connecting things to adult experience that I maybe have, like, seen from a distance, if that makes any sense. So, yeah, like, so I see this and, you know, I have the benefit of some hindsight being like, wow. You know, like, wow, it's really, in terms of putting in context, the relationships between black women and how that comes together and how so much of it often comes from struggle and this desire to maintain legacy and community. I thought it was like really powerful in that regard. In addition, I don't want this to seem more specific than it actually is. Like, in a vague way, it also felt a lot like an indictment.
That's what I'm curious about.
So, you know, to jump into it.
Yeah, I mean, because I just want you to know, you are the first black man, period, outside of my dad, really, that, like, a first American black man that I've spoken to about Lemonade. It's not just a black female experience. Also, I'd say even more specifically, it's a black Southern American female narrative. I'm very curious about how you, as a black American, straight black man, feel about the indictment part. This is the first wave of reaction that I'm getting. And so I'm ready.
Well, I was happy about it. I was conflicted. So let me tell you, I was happy about it. I was conflicted. I was inspired to a degree. And I'll talk through those relatively quickly. So I was happy about it because you have experiences, you go through life and you make decisions, right? Like, I've been in relationships, just to be straight up, I've been in relationships where, you know, I haven't been the best person. I haven't been the best partner.
Okay.
You've been witness. You've often, you know, been like, well, what's going on there? What's your goal with this?
What is your goal?
You see the reaction and the fallout to that behavior.
Yeah.
And you don't see it stylized. You know what I'm saying? You see it what's like in real life. You see it in those moments.
Yeah.
That aren't necessarily strung together as cohesively. So I wouldn't say that was what made me happy, but it was nice to see that entire experience. And I'm not talking about from my side, but for Black women to have that and that be okay. Like I knew in seeing that, you know, portraying this entire experience. And that was exciting for me. Even though it was like saying to men or to a man, you know, you kind of ain't about shit. I'm talking about more so the first half of the movie. But I was excited to see that, I'm excited for the Black women that I know to have that mental and visual language.
Mm-hmm.
And to have Beyonce, maybe not even arguably, like the most important like pop star
of our time
right now, be the person to take that on and put that out there.
At such a high level
was really fascinating. I was trying to think back to like, you know, there are examples of kind of narratives like this, but like, you know, you think about like The Color Purple, like, you know, in terms of visual language and things that talk about Black women and Black communities and how they relate. I also think about things like Fried Green Tomatoes, you know, like
How to Make American Quilt, all that. Yeah, kind of stuff. You know, even musically, like Lauryn Hill and Erykah Badu, but this is different.
This is different. This is definitely different. But it was exciting to see that and have it be so clear, so cohesive, and so out there, and know that this is going to be pervasive. Like this is gonna be the thing for a while that people look to and discuss. Was exciting. Made me happy. And then I felt guilty. You know what I'm saying? Like because I've had those experiences where I've been the person to inflict this sort of reaction.
Yeah.
And that was tough. You know, I mean, it was really difficult because, you know, it's difficult to see, like, hold up, where she's in a yellow dress.
With the baseball bat.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, hot sauce. It's difficult to see that.
Really?
Well, I mean, I've seen it.
I've been that.
Well, I mean, I don't think there's a Black man who's tried to live the life, quote unquote, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Who's been out there mixing, who hasn't seen or caused that, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like in some way, shape, or form. But honestly, at that time, I thought I knew what was happening, but this person didn't.
Wait, what do you mean? You thought you
so like visualizing that in that way and portraying it as kind of crazy as she did, really shows that like you're causing someone to knowingly and feel like they're losing their mind and express that. Does that make sense?
Wow.
You know, like
my mind is blown right now, just because so much of like being in a relationship and like a male female romantic relationship as a woman. It's just like load bearing, and it like you are one of the people I hold most dear. I trust your judgment. I do. I trust your judgment. But like, it's very interesting that like this visualization caused like still even the tiniest of light bulbs to come on.
Well, I mean,
no, I know you know it logically, but then you saw it and you were like,
Well, again, having like, you know, I mean, we often talk in terms of media. We talk in terms of music, we talk in terms of movies, art, books. And again, that just gives me some sort of like specific reference to what I've seen and experienced in the world. Like that's how we talk. That's the reason for this fucking show. you know, so seeing that, I haven't seen something like that crystallize in that way that's relatable to my age and like experiences and what I've been through. It hadn't all lined up in that particular way. I mean, I obviously knew before that, like, I'm not trying to cause
no,
to be
but
crazy.
Like, this visual.
But this visual was very striking. It reached right down into those memories and was like, take a look at what you did. You know?
That's very interesting.
And that was, it was difficult to watch. It was difficult to watch and feel like you had inspired these feelings in someone else. And these are
interesting.
You know, I've been with real people. Like, and I was listening to There's this American Life episode that was talking about, like, in defense of ignorance. Stephanie Fu was doing a story about people who didn't have the ability to forget memories. As a part of, like, telling that story, she told a story about a relationship that she had had. Uh-huh. And she thought back to, this guy was a douchebag, this guy was an asshole, after they broke up, because that was the way that helped her feel most distant mm-hmm. from the relationship and kind of move forward. And a lot of times, that felt very familiar to me, because a lot of times, you know, you'll look back at, like, an ex or something and be like, oh, yeah, kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, what watching a video like Hold Up does is be like, well, you kind of made that person crazy. You know what I'm saying? And not yeah. to say that these people are still like that. I'm very, like, the same way I've grown and moved past these experiences. Yeah, I bet yeah. they have too. But at the time, I probably made a couple people crazy, at least for a moment in time.
You did.
Yeah. And, you know, I not to say that I didn't feel guilty about it then, and I haven't felt any guilt since then, but it was just kind of bringing that back to light.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of putting it at the forefront, which is something I think, something a lot of men have to confront.
It was really interesting because, like for me watching it, it brought back a lot of things. Mm-hmm. It brought back the immediacy of the emotions. I think of cheating in general, infidelity, whether it's emotional or physical,
yeah.
is, I think of it as a triangle, right? Mm-hmm. You're the cheater.
Yeah.
You are the person being cheated with, or yeah. you're the person being cheated on. Mm-hmm. In different, okay, so like, you know, whatever, I'm 28. Over the course of my dating life, so let's say, I would say probably it didn't get popping until about a decade, mm-hmm. 11 years ago. I have been in all three positions. I would say something I really strongly reject. I never am going to be the person. I don't do the whole quote unquote other woman garbage bullshit. Mm-hmm. I've had some people really try to pop that off.
Yeah.
And like, that's just not something that's like against my moral code. It's something that I won't do. I think of it like, I will make my own mess. I will not help you make yours. Seriously.
Yeah. That's just a good way to put it.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I can be responsible for my own shit. If I decide I want to do something that doesn't make any sense, I can live with those consequences because I've made that choice.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be I don't know what you have going on. I'm not about to be brought into all your bullshit and all your mess.
Yeah.
And if you're going to be so ratchet on this other person, why should I spend any time with you?
Yeah.
Right. Like, so I think about it two specific ways. It's very easy to cross boundaries. It's
yeah.
very easy. I read this really good, Ta-Nehisi wrote about this. Well, back mm-hmm. when before he was like, you know, became like the yeah. go-to race guy, he used to write about a bunch of different stuff, especially I think on his Atlantic blog.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he talked about, I can't remember what, it was like something about moral judgment.
Yeah.
It was this idea I think he got from reading about murder or something like that. It's, you don't walk through, it's not like there's a doorway. Mm-hmm. And then on one side, you're like, oh, cheating is terrible. On mm-hmm. the other side, you're like, this is awesome. This is great. It's like you walk through several doors, right?
Yeah.
Where, like, it's okay to keep in contact with somebody that maybe you used to kick it with.
Yeah.
And then, like, you walk through another door, and it's okay for them to contact you at 3:00 in the morning. Mm. And then it's okay for you to respond at 3:00 in the morning. And then it's okay for y'all to be talking on the phone. And then it's okay for you to meet up in person. And then it's okay for you to meet up later in person. It's okay for you not to mention that any of this to your partner.
Yeah.
And you know what I'm saying? It's yeah. like you walk through a series. Like, it's not, what it is, it's like the decision to cheat is not made when, you know, someone's penis is inside you, or you put your penis in somebody else, or you do any number of things with any number of kinds of genitals that you have. It's, the decision is made when you decide you're going to go have a drink with this person, or when you decide, or when you have the first drink and that's fine, but when you're like, let's have another.
Yeah.
Like, the decision is made then. So, like, it's very easy to cheat, number one, and it's super pervasive, and it's yeah. something that, like, I think everybody is touched by. So, and, like, the guilt is crazy, I'm sure, and you feel, you know, whatever. But nothing feels worse than somebody betraying you. And the thing about cheating is not just, like, or infidelity or whatever. It's not just, like, the transgression. It's also, like, someone is not there for you when you needed them to be there for you.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, human beings go through any number of things. You know what I'm saying? And you need your partner to be there for you. And when they're not, like, it's not just, like, they decided to spend time with this other person, but it's like they were doing that at the expense of the support that you needed. And I've been in a situation where I was going through something extremely difficult, and my partner at the time was not there for me.
Yeah.
And that was already bothering me enough. And then, you know, to find out that I was not the sole focus of their yeah. attention, right? It's shattering in a way that I can't even describe. And so when I watched that and I saw the feelings come back, like, I felt those feelings come back, and I saw the immediacy of her anger. And like, I'll admit, the first time that I watched it, I didn't watch it on Twitter, so I didn't get, I thought it was an extended allegory about survival and, you know what I mean? And like resurrection, and I didn't think of it necessarily as her life story or anything like that. But yeah. Still, I thought it was a very convincing portrayal, and the music and the images were brilliant. It just reminded me of how I never want to feel that way again. And how scary it is that it's always possible. And that you, like I think of trust as like, you have faith that your partner will respect your relationship in any context. You also have faith that your partner will make the right choices and not put him or herself in a position to disrespect your relationship. But you have no control over that. And if you want to remain in a healthy relationship, you cannot. You can place reasonable boundaries, you know, together as a couple, but you can't place certain boundaries on another person. You have trusting just means like, I believe that you're doing what you say you're doing and that you're going to continue to do that for the foreseeable future. But like, you don't know. You never know. The fact that like, I'd never seen it so well portrayed, like that feeling.
Yeah.
I had never seen it so well portrayed musically and visually simultaneously. I had never felt People sing about getting cheated on. Beyonce, her damn self, has been singing about, I said this, she's been singing about getting cheated on for her entire career. That's how she's made her money. But like, she's been singing about getting cheated on by Jay-Z because he's like, you know, a central figure in a lot of her music. Regardless of whether or not it's true, you implicitly just assume that that's who she's talking about. Jay-Z, the real person, or Jay-Z, the character. It still is just something about it. Just even the visual of her with the baseball bat. When someone has betrayed you in a very intense and deep and personal way, you want nothing more than to pick up a weapon
and destroy.
Not shoot somebody. You want to actually feel something being destroyed.
Yeah. It's interesting where you put, even to come back a little bit, not to the last statement you said, but like talking about how like the lingering threat of infidelity is kind of always there. I mean, that actually wasn't my takeaway. Not to say that it's not the takeaway, but it's one of them.
That wasn't my initial takeaway at all.
Yeah.
Only after repeated viewings and then really logically kind of putting together the likelihood that relates back to her life.
Yeah.
At first I was like, you know, I don't know if she'd put her business out there. But then you have to consider, like, I saw who said this on Twitter, Corporate Barbie, where she was just like, regular dudes cheat in the 6 to 8 year, you know, 7 year itch period.
Yeah.
And also like shortly after you have a child.
Yeah.
Like that's a thing that regular dudes do. So why not this rich and powerful man? And also too, putting that out there was like saying to any side chick, do you know what I'm saying? Come out.
Yeah.
Come out wherever you are. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like you have to have an insane amount of security in your relationship to place yourselves in those particular roles in such a realistic way. Like that leads me to now believe this really is probably about their life.
At least semi-autographed.
Yeah, at least semi. Like it didn't come out of thin air, I guess is what I mean.
No, I mean, I completely agree. I guess for me, it was more so like, this is what happens.
Well, you're in a different.
I'm in a different position. Like for me, it was like, fuck, man, this is what happened. I mean, the reconciliation isn't always what happens. But, I think for a lot of men, we primarily focused on the anger and the aftermath and the apathy.
Yeah.
You know, that she, that part of the cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, as a married man, as a newly married man, like, I mean, obviously, I'm not out there trying to mix and be in the mix. I just want a honeymoon. I'm doing good. But but seeing that visual reminder is like, fuck, man, don't blow your life up. Seriously. Don't blow your life up. Because, I've done that before. I've seen that. And she talks about that being a pattern. Like, Daddy Lessons is like, this is a pattern. You know, I've seen that pattern. There's a lot of black men who are very familiar with that pattern.
Like, yeah.
You see somebody else do it. Oh, man, that looks bright and shiny. You start doing it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, it's not a fun experience in the moment. But for some reason, when you have some distance between it, you forget. It allows you to continue that cycle and you don't even realize you're participating in it until you're in the fallout again. I feel happy that I look back enough on my own behavior to feel like I can avoid that type of pattern.
Uh-huh.
But seeing it again, seeing the fallout is like, fuck, man. Yep. Don't want to go back there.
Yeah.
Like that's not, I'm not trying to stress my wife out like that.
Yeah.
Like that.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease and a whole lot of love, you transform 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. LED headlights, spoilers, whatever you need. eBay Motors has it at affordable prices. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride every time. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Deep.
The thing that freaks me out, I guess, is like, so, you know, we discussed, not like in depth before, but like I'm in a relationship now,
yeah,
which I haven't always been over the course of the show. Mm-hmm. And I understand how easy it is to fuck that sort of thing up, right?
Yeah.
And at any point, I was dishonest in a relationship.
Yeah.
I'm glad that it happened back when I was younger because it's one of those, I learned a lot from the experience, right? Just keeping my own boundaries and trusting my own judgment.
Yeah.
I feel like actually because I have been dishonest before, mm-hmm. that like I have a much better perspective on how to keep my side of the street clean. Do you know what I'm saying? I know how to stay out of trouble, but I also know how easily trouble comes. What freaks me out is just sort of, it's like so likely that in any relationship, one person is going to cheat or get cheated on. I don't know. I feel like almost powerless in the, like on one hand, I feel like I have this under control.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I feel like I'm powerless in the face of this thing that probably is going to touch my life at some point. Again.
I will say that I'm married right now. I'm newly married. But, you know, I've been in my relationship for a decent amount of time.
Yeah.
And I will say that there is a bit of distance between, like for me and I hope for my wife. there's a reasonable amount of distance from this being a looming thing. Like, it's something that obviously you consider and that could happen. But it's like, it's not as heavy.
See, it wasn't really on my mind until I watched Lemonade.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And like, it really brought a lot of things.
It's just like, it's just like weird because like, I never want to feel that again.
Yeah.
Even like the second half of it.
Yeah.
Which I found to be so impressive. And I found to be such a reversal of this narrative of like, you're a woman and you get cheated on and you get angry and that's the end. And you're sad and that's the end. I love the fact that the second half is like this whole thing where she retreats into herself. She focuses on her work. She feels the anger. She feels the emptiness. She feels the sadness. She feels missing the other person. She even reconciles with the person.
Yeah.
But then pushes beyond that. And continues to, like, she sequesters herself off on a plantation with a whole bunch of other black women and creates from this place of terror, right?
Yeah.
Not just terror in her relationship, but actual, like, the geographical location, a plantation in Louisiana. Like, the terror of this location and turns it into a space of healing. Turns her pain in her relationship into this, like, creates a space of healing for herself. And then, like, continues to heal with the other women that she surrounded herself with, even after she's reconciled. Then she waxes about the beauty of her love, right? In the second to last song, All Night. And then she's back to Beyonce form, right?
Yeah.
In formation. Like, she does the full 360 degrees. So I still have this understanding that somebody mistreats you, life goes on.
Totally.
And you can continue, like, whether you open up your heart to love this other person again and to try to repair your relationship, or whether you just open up your heart in general and just not become, because I definitely understand just speaking for myself, it's very easy to become cold and hard and closed off and to not trust yourself, not trust your own judgment, not trust a partner. Mm-hmm. It's fucking hard. I've been having these weird mood swings since Lemonade where it's like, can you trust anybody? Is everyone a piece of shit? And like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then like, my life is fine. My relationship is fine. And if anything happens, I'm going to be okay. And I've literally been, I've just been going back and forth between those two spaces. And I never was thinking like, oh, I want to watch Beyonce's new album and I'm going to feel this thing.
But the thing that I also took away from this is like, I mean, I definitely saw where she retreated into herself. And a lot of it is about her finding kind of solace in her community and using that to like build themselves back up. But it also made me partnership and, you know, how like for me, like infidelity is something that affects your partnership, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Infidelity causes you to reassess what your partnership means to both people. You know, what it means to you, what it means to that person, and what it means to be together. And so I thought this was really interesting. I also really appreciated the back half for how it, to me, also focused on partnership.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember which one it is. Sandcastles, where they talk about like this promise that you make. You know, every promise don't work out that way. And like dealing with like what it means to really, I'm with someone. I like what I talked about, this meaning is now bigger and different than what I anticipated. And I need to deal with the impact of that. Like that was really, really powerful for me. Like I told you I was reading this book and it was fucking me up.
Uh-huh.
It's White Girls by Hilton Halls, which is excellent. Uh-huh. Amazing book.
Like, I've heard.
Amazing book. It literally blows my mind all the time. But so in this book, he talks about marriage. He's a gay man. And so this book describes like, I think what
gay
I mentioned.
Gay black man too.
Gay black man.
Uh-huh.
It describes love and partnership in a way, like in a language that I wasn't as familiar with, obviously. Uh-huh. I mean, partly is his approach, his artistry. Uh-huh. But a part of it is I don't know what it's like to be a gay black man.
Uh-huh.
You know, but I found it really, really interesting and intriguing. I identified a lot with it, especially when he talked about marriage. And he describes marriage in this way that I never kind of thought about before, uh-huh. which was as a twinship. So he describes the concept of twins as being like the first like real partnership. If you think about twins as a concept, you know, uh-huh. they are together from the womb.
Yeah.
And he also talks about twins as like, you know, people misconstrue what it means to be a twin. They're not just alike. They're just, they have this connection, but they're very, very different.
Yeah.
And so he had this passage. I'm going to read it real quick. I've always thought of twinship by birth or choice as a kind of marriage, another metaphor that sustains some of us. As metaphors go, marriage, twins joined by a ring and flesh, has always been attractive to me. The pomp and the circumstance, the illusion veil and the orange blossom, the rice landing on sanctioned heads like a hard rain, as I become we if they weren't born that way. So that was real deep to me. Like the pomp and the circumstance, he's talking about like all the things that we like identify as being what marriage is and two people joining together.
Yeah.
And like two people are very different.
Yeah.
But he then talks about how those things fade away very quickly.
Yeah.
And then you have to decide like, why am I with this person? How are we like, how are we together? How are we connected? And basically what he comes back to is like this twinship.
Mm-hmm.
That connection is something that, like, when you are a twin with someone, it doesn't really break. It changes. And so I thought this was really interesting in terms of her having this event that caused her to reevaluate kind of her partnership with this person, her twinship, if you will,
mm-hmm.
and deciding that, like, in spite of that, they need to work through it.
Yeah.
So anyway, it just made me think about being a partner with someone and, like, having to assess the hard things that make you really like expand your language in terms of what a partnership means.
Mm-hmm.
And it really kind of hit me in that way. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I thought it was really, really fascinating. And in addition to the patterns, like, so you described the 360 part, right?
Uh-huh.
This is like all 360 degrees of it. But the other thing that I thought, and as a man I connected with, is her describing, like there's the pieces where she describes the patterns that she saw in Jay-Z and her father and like what that meant. Like that was really fucking tough, but that spoke to me. Like I've seen that pattern. I don't know a black man who hasn't seen that pattern,
mm-hmm.
but we often don't necessarily escape it and don't realize that you're passing it down. Like to make a weird connection, like if you talk about like love and hip hop,
okay. Yeah.
Clearly, I know a little bit about it. But like Peter Guns, It's, mm-hmm. He's just like, I call him a tragic figure. I don't mean that in a way that's like lifting him up, but he's like legitimately a tragic figure.
I agree.
Like he has like I want to say 9 or 10 kids by many women.
Yeah.
And he continuously gets into these cycles where he is establishing like a really tight love and then betraying that woman, usually by producing another child.
Yeah.
And especially in the show, going back and forth between two women. And he has a conversation with his daughter about him supposedly having a vasectomy so he can stop this cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And
that makes me so sad.
Yeah. And she is talking to him about the fact that, like, I don't know why you haven't realized you need to do this sooner. Like,
how old is she?
She's like an adult. And she's like, I'm having these problems with the men that I find because I'm recognizing they're like you. And that hurts me.
Yeah.
That I haven't been able to get this distance and that you don't even recognize it. And you're still doing it. He was distraught in this conversation. He's crying. He's like, I don't want this for you. Like, you know, I'm sorry. I never wanted to make you feel like this.
Yeah.
It was a really intimate moment. And then, you know, a few months later, literally at the reunion, it comes out that he's having another kid. He didn't even have the vasectomy that it seemed like had really finally realized was the thing that kind of needed to happen to stop the impact of these bad decisions he was making.
It's so, what's crazier is that he feels so out of control of his own body.
Yeah.
That a vasectomy seems like that's the
thing that needs to happen.
Yeah.
But I mean, it is to the point where he refuses to acknowledge the other shit.
Well, he obviously like that's something that, like,
he's an addict.
Yeah, he is an addict. But also, like, it's likely that that's, like you mentioned, like a behavior that he picked up from his family somewhere.
Exactly.
And what's crazy is that, like, I'm sure he's probably had some type of conversation with his daughter before about what kind of guy she should be dating.
Yeah.
Most fathers do. And what's funny, and like one of the things I really enjoyed about Daddy Lessons is that she, you know, the lyrics are, when trouble comes to town, men like me come around. Like, this is Beyonce's father speaking. My daddy said, shoot. Basically meaning, like, if you meet a man like me, like, I love you, you're my daughter, I'm raising you, but if you meet a man like me, shoot him dead.
Yeah.
Get rid of him. Stay away. And it's just like, it makes me think again about, like, the emotional work. Instead of just choosing to be different or encouraging the people around you to be different or raising your sons differently, you instead, like, the same way that a vasectomy seemed like the most logical choice for Peter Guns, the most logical choice for a conversation that in within the world of Daddy Lessons, the most logical conversation that you can have with your daughter is, like, not even like, this is what you might want to be looking for in a partner, or this person should make you feel this way. If you meet a man like me, stay away. Shoot.
You know, I mean, watching that as a father,
like
as a father to a girl now, was like, whoa, I don't ever want to have that conversation with my child. I don't ever want to have my child have to look at me and think, this is what I don't need in my life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that, like, that was really, really, that shit was really powerful. And then to see, like, even, you know, kind of the generational aspects of that. Like, now, Beyonce's dad is a grandfather, you know, and he's, you know, potentially having to have those conversations with another child. That's another opportunity to break this pattern, to break this cycle. I thought that was, like, an amazingly powerful, and even her showing all the different vignettes, showing, like, different men, I imagine, like, New Orleans or, like Houston, and just how pervasive this is. It comes in many different forms. It looks very different, you know, for everybody, but that pattern is the same, and it's, like, it's something, as a man, I look for, is, like, I really have to figure out. I mean, honestly, there are a lot of patterns I'm trying to break from.
I think we all have that problem.
Yeah, but, you know, that's one I don't want to establish, and it's one I definitely want to make sure it's not cyclical within my child.
It's just like, it was when you, like, talk about, like, a partnership and redefining a partnership in what the wake of infidelity, it's like one of those, so much, I think, especially of, like, heteronormative love is not even about partnership. It's about, like, what can you get? Like, what are you getting? Mm-hmm. And marriage is still a funny concept for me. Like, I do want to get married because I, like, right now, that's, like, the most official way to acknowledge and solidify a partnership for me. Mm-hmm. That's not, that's nobody, I'm not saying that anybody else feels that way, but for me, that's something, it's a goal of mine, something that I want. But, like, I think, like, you know, obviously there's, like, the real historical implications of marriage and, like, you know what I'm saying, like, dowries, and you're getting a daughter is someone to be given away, something to be given away. But then also, like, it also kind of makes me think about when we were talking about formation, mm-hmm. And how a lot of people were upset with Beyonce being so capitalistic. But also, like I mentioned, that like money is something that allows you a level of independence within like our capitalist structure, like that you really kind of need as a woman to cover your ass.
Yeah.
And have that to fall back on. It came back up in Don't Hurt Yourself when she's like, you know, keep your money, I have my own. Mm-hmm. You know, keep a bigger smile on my face being alone. It kind of like, yeah, this woman does make a lot of money. I'm sure she makes it because it's fun and because like, why the fuck not?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But also like, thinking of Beyonce as somebody who, even in the face of Jay-Z, is like, I don't fucking need you. I don't fucking need you.
Yeah.
Like, it, like when you, like so much of being in a relationship, especially a heteronormative relationship, is like, and sometimes, a lot of times still for women, being able to have access to something that you may not otherwise. Mm-hmm. So whether it be financial stability,
yeah.
The ability to take care of your nuclear family unit, independent of your extended family or your parents, home ownership, travel, you know, even just speaking like subjectively, a more exciting lifestyle that maybe yeah. you could afford on your own because of the way that like just sexism, misogyny in general, even just like opportunity inequalities and like economic inequalities, yeah. like even just the wage gap. It's so like a lot, like for a lot of women, like getting married is a goal still because it's something that allows you a life that you may not have access to otherwise, just because of the way that our society is set up. And then, you know, for a man, I don't really quite always know what the I guess it's like a part, it's like a, for a lot of men, it can be like a part of a package, I guess. It's like a, it can be like getting married can be a status thing. And also like having the security of knowing that somebody is going to be there for you no matter yeah. what. And like someone's getting, like even now we live in a, I guess, a technically a more egalitarian society. Someone is going to be there to help you or to primarily raise your children. And infidelity being something that you tacitly accept as mm-hmm. a woman is part of what keeps that idea of marriage and keeps that idea of relationships going, right? Yeah. Like it all, like all of those pieces interlock. But like I guess when you take the economic dependence out of it, your partner is somebody who is in your life based upon their behavior and not what mm. they can provide you.
Yeah.
Not even what they can provide you in like when you think of like an 11 hip hop type of way,
yeah.
but what they can actually just provide you to survive. In yeah. most people's cases, it's like all you're left with is the way that they treat you and their behavior. And like, that's not a way that most people are used to looking at relationships. And that was something that did kind of come up in the second half when she chooses to, like, the choice to reconcile is like something that you obviously see that Beyonce did not have to do.
Yeah. She's Beyonce.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But something, yeah, because she's Beyonce and because she can be independent of her partner. It was just really interesting to me that, like, that was even a piece of it. Just yeah. sort of, like, this, like, I don't, like, you know, like, you've cheated on me. And in the traditional sense, I should still need you, but I don't. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
So, like, what are we left with? What are you going to do? And that's when you get into the calf kissing. You know what I mean? And that's when you get into the...
Yeah.
Calves, it's a lot of women out there could send, you know, calves feeling dry. Caps full of mad dry texts. But I don't know. I mean, I guess she still does choose to work it out with Jay-Z. Obviously, she's chosen in real life, as yeah. far as we all know. And she chose on the album to get, like, to stay with him or whatever. But, like, a lot of women have to reconcile, but she chose to. What does that even mean? What does that even mean? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If I don't, if like, yeah, what does that mean? What does that look like? Why do you do it?
I mean,
I'm not saying I necessarily wouldn't do the same thing, but just like,
yeah, no. I mean, I don't know. Literally, I have. I mean, obviously, I haven't had a major event. You know what I'm saying? Where reconciliation is the thing that made a difference in my partnership.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. usually the thing happens is the impact, and that's it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, luckily, I'm, you know, blessed that hasn't come up in, you know, in our situation right now, especially as a result of my behavior. Yeah. But, but that's the thing about, that's why I say, like, that's why it's really interesting to have to, like, to get to that moment and to have it visualized getting to that moment, and then having to reassess your partnership. Cause, like, you don't have any real bearing. I didn't have any real basis on, like, what taking that step back, reassessing this partnership,
mm-hmm.
and deciding it needs to stay looks like.
Yeah.
You hope that no matter what happens, that that's the decision that you will make.
Yeah.
But you don't know how to, at least I don't know how to actually do that work.
Oh, damn.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that is, that's a fascinating thing. Obviously, it's like summarized in this type of narrative. Yeah. But it was an awesome thing to see. And it was also awesome to see Jay-Z, like that, that was his like way of showing that he was doing the work. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that it goes on like, it goes on both sides.
What do you think though? Because that's the other thing. A lot of people were like, oh, Jay-Z shows up for one scene. And I'm like, no.
I had him there for
yeah,
one scene.
Yeah, and I'm a black woman who's 28, okay? I've been listening to Jay-Z almost my entire, for 20 yeah. fucking years I'm listening to Jay-Z. He's a cocky ass motherfucker.
Yeah.
And so to see an image of him at his wife's feet,
so
right?
Vulnerable.
So vulnerable after she decimated him for about 35 minutes,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Like, that was one of those things that where everyone's like, oh, that was one scene. And I'm like, no. Like, sit there and sit in that scene for a second. I wonder, is that going to be lost on a lot of people?
I don't.
And a lot of men? And also, like, what does that, like, I want to know, like, okay, so, like, I just want, I'm curious as to what that part, like, if there were men who even really understood the weight of that visual.
No,
and how that might apply to their own lives. I'm serious.
Yeah. No, I mean, I definitely think there were, and there were a lot. Like, I mean, obviously, in terms of men and what we focused on and identified with, that was one of the pieces that I think a lot of men actually spoke to.
Yeah.
Real talk, being my age, who did you look up to, you know
yeah,
what I'm saying,
yeah,
but fucking
yeah,
Jay-Z?
Yeah.
And even, like, even before then, like, you know, Jay-Z was this revered figure. And even when they got together, it was his presence in that relationship was also very interesting. Like, there used to be articles talking about how Jay-Z's body language was always so weird when they would perform initially.
Yeah.
Because he wouldn't look at her. He was always kind of like standing like, oh, I'm this cool dude. And
yeah.
she was like dancing around or like, you know, kind of yeah. on him. But it was like a lack of acknowledgement that like, yo, y'all are both
equals.
In this
yeah.
together and equals. But like, what's interesting is like now that body language, that interaction between them, like at least, you know, from a performative standpoint, is very different. It's very different. And that especially is like fucking inconceivable.
Yeah.
you know,
yeah.
considering who he was. And, you know, I see that and I see shirking a lot of the hyper masculinity of hip hop and rap.
Uh-huh.
And I also see shirking like a lot of the shit that came before. Because real talk, that cocky bravado, that
big
I
pimpin',
am, yeah, big pimping lifestyle started a long time before that.
Yeah,
you know, like you think about like the blaxploitation movies of the 70s.
It's broke motherfuckers who are old and over 60 who
yeah.
have been living the life.
Exactly. Yeah. You know that portrayal, that person has existed for a long time, but Jay-Z
yeah.
is one of the most recent and most popular, most successful manifestations of that. So,
yeah.
so to see him shirk that, I don't think it was lost on a lot of black men.
I agree. And actually, now that you put it that way, I think that there seemed to be a pretty strong reaction, though, to be like kind of like rejecting this. Because, you know, again, as we've spoken about
yeah.
before, women like Beyonce, so Beyonce must be dumb.
Exactly.
And yeah, and so like Beyonce made something that got a lot of women like
yeah.
You know what I'm saying
yeah.
just on edge.
It's some folks had some it's some relationships that had some difficult conversations in the past like what 2 weeks
yes.
like
yes. yeah no seriously
yeah.
it's crazy. I never would have fucking thought, but like seriously yeah like there's people have been there's been some awkward silences.
She fucked up a lot of people's late April early May.
Hey.
like
hey.
Yes. Fucked up a lot.
It's very interesting that Beyonce dropped this right as cuffing season's going
right?
to close. So I want to talk about something else though.
Yeah.
So obviously this is like foreign about black women, but there was something really interesting. And so like there's a lot going on with that. Beyonce's gotten a lot of criticism and flack in the past for wanting to be white, seeming white, mm-hmm. not like being basically not being black enough. And so I found two major things really important. I want to get to both of them, but there's one I want to focus on in particular. I'll breeze past the first one for now. She had a wide range of different types and ages of black women
yep.
in there. And like she was aligning them all with herself, sort mm-hmm. of like, I am just like them. They are me. We are peers. But also there's a specific line. Everybody's talked about it. Becky with the good hair.
Yeah.
And I heard it and I was like, ooh, I know that bitch. And if I saw her today in the street, she'd probably still get slapped out by me.
Yeah.
But also, I know what it feels like to have like 10 times over. I know what it feels like to be dating somebody or to have a partner who clearly prefers somebody who looks like they are not of your racial group, right? And it fucks you up in a way that I cannot describe. To have somebody tell you that they love you or that they care about you or they think you're beautiful or they think you're interesting or whatever, but to know that they are, but still have them be in subtle ways highly critical of you and your blackness and having that be, I dated somebody for a while where I didn't realize, I saw them after, you know, we stopped like hang out or whatever. There's a way that you can, like, there's a protective style twist. My hair is twisted right now. I have a baseball cap on. Two strand twist. All black women know what it means. You're putting your hair in twist and then, you know, it's wet and then it dries, you untwist it. And sometimes your hair can have like a more consistent or looser, it can appear to have a looser curl pattern. Mm-hmm. When I was dating this person, I didn't realize until after it was over, I consistently twisted my hair because on some level, I felt like,
damn.
Yeah, right, okay. right. On some level, I felt like I don't feel comfortable with this person just seeing me as I am because I don't feel like that's enough for this person. I don't feel like that's right for this person. I don't think it's beautiful enough for this person. Then I saw them afterward and they're like, your hair's so curly. And I was like, this is what my hair actually looks like.
Yeah.
You made me feel like that was terrible. On some real shit, when some shit really went down, I've had to look at somebody in the face and just tell them, you made me feel terrible for being black. That's a fucked up way to feel. Yeah. And so it's interesting to see that Beyonce felt, you know what I'm saying? On some level, like she's felt that. This woman who, like, with this long flowing blonde hair and, you know what I'm saying, who for many black men who have, for many black men who don't also, but for many black men who do have insecurity issues and self-hate issues that they, like, then foist upon the women in their lives, like, she's still the ideal for them in a lot of ways. And to have her feel like, I'm still not good enough for you because I look too black, that's some real deep shit. And it got me thinking about somebody who people have been shitting on a lot, who I will never say a sideways word about this person and what they've chosen to do with their body, is Lil' Kim. Mm. And people have been sitting around and fucking laughing at this woman.
Yeah.
For living out basically the entire life cycle, or maybe not even the entire life cycle, but a lot of the life cycle of this like narrative arc that Beyonce gave us with Lemonade. Lil' Kim's obviously lived that out. She's spoken before in interviews about how the dude, like, she's had her father, all the men that she's dated in her life, tell her that she was too black and ugly.
Yeah.
Notorious B.I.G.
Yeah, Faith. Look a little different.
Told Lil' Kim that she's too black and ugly. Yeah, and left her for Faith Evans, who I think is biracial, if I'm not mistaken. Faith Evans, who's, you know, lighter skinned, and she and Kim said, like, I always was, like, cheated with, like, you know, the guys were always cheating on me with, and leaving me for more European looking women, and you see how she's like,
she's evolved,
yeah, and how she's manipulated her appearance. I just wanted to make sure that wasn't lost on people. You know what I'm saying? No. Like, oh, there's a lot of black women who have felt that. I'm light skinned.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't have it that fucking bad. Yeah. Sadly enough, I don't have it that fucking bad. And I felt a deep, like, I've had other people plant a seed of self-hatred in me through their own insecurities and our own whatever weird romantic relationship mess. And I don't even have billions of dollars, like, or millions, hundreds of millions of dollars to fall back on. I don't have, like, billions of people adoring me to fall back on. Like, nobody's looking at me and, like, is like, this is the beacon of female attractiveness, right? Yeah. And, like, a lot of people feel that, like, Beyonce has still felt that, and Lil' Kim has still felt that. And Lil' Kim, by some measures, you could say she didn't necessarily make it out on the other side, right? Yeah. And I find it really interesting that the majority of the conversation around that line has been about white women and how they feel. Still about black men cheating, and very little about how Becky with the good hair is somebody that Lil' Kim knows very well and has, it could be argued that she's remade herself in this person's image.
Oof. Well, yeah. Glad I had my coffee today. I mean, we've talked about this a fair bit.
Yeah.
I think in the last episode.
Yeah.
It's really difficult to see that happen consistently in terms of black women. I mean, they come in all different shades. Like, my mom's light-skinned. You know, my sister is dark-skinned. You know, I'm married to a dark-skinned woman. Like my child is, like, becoming a dark-skinned woman.
Yeah, she's a little chocolate chip.
Yeah. and it's intense to see and be in close proximity to all those things happening and the exploration of what Black women feel like as they go through life. And it's even more difficult to feel like, you know, to look out in the world and see that all those different manifestations are being rebuked and like the results of that rebuke, the results of that, you know, cultural indictment. Like, I never heard that Malcolm X quote where he was like the...
Oh, really?
I never heard that. Yeah, the, you know, the most unprotected woman in the world.
Unprotected, disrespected, and I can't remember the other one.
But yeah, it's the Black woman like that. I mean, again, that's it's mostly inward. You know, it's mostly the fact that it's transference. You don't feel confident in what you look and feel like and how you're respected in the world. So you transfer that onto, you know, the person you're with or in close proximity to, which is often a Black woman, often a darker skinned woman.
Yeah.
And so that's how that comes to light. And it's I like how you said, like, in terms of the wake of even talking about Becky with the good hair, like, there isn't as much conversation or like a lot of it has been like this search for who she is as opposed to the ideal that, you know, that the ideal of what she is and what that signifies. And I think that is important. It hasn't been lost on everybody. I think the conversation has been out there. But but no, it is. It's interesting to see that discussion play out and also to see it in respect to Little Kim. Like, a lot of people have been laughing at her, and she is such a tragic figure as like, especially in comparison to this person who is so revered, right? And, you know, in comparison to Biggie, like, to have her put next to, she's constantly, like, her legacy is inherently tied to his.
Yeah.
And this was this person who she still loves, she still reviews, you know, when they act, like, hell, it's not a many interviews that she does, but she doesn't talk about him.
Yeah.
Or she isn't asked about him, rather.
Yeah.
And it's clear that this person had, like, a really traumatic effect on her, on the rest of her life.
Yeah, I mean, he's gone. He's been dead 20 years. He released 2 albums.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? And he's still who she's tied to.
I mean, that's fucked up. To have that effect play out so publicly over the rest of her life, it's really sad. You don't want that for her, for somebody.
No.
Because she is clearly really talented. And, like, is this fascinating figure. Like, hip-hop wouldn't be what it is today.
No.
You know, there wouldn't be...
Nicki Minaj.
There wouldn't be a Nicki Minaj.
There wouldn't be certain shades of Beyonce without Lil' Kim.
There probably wouldn't even be Foxy if it wasn't for Lil' Kim.
True.
You know what I'm saying? Like, even if you go back, you know, she was at the forefront of that burst that you kind of had. I mean, mind you, there were people before her.
Yeah.
But like, of women rapping in that style. Like, it became much more okay after Lil' Kim did.
Yeah.
You know, it sucks to see her... people not realize that, you know, these decisions are so closely tied to this pain and what that pain looks like.
It's weird because, like, for me, it was actually validating in a great way because I hadn't really seen somebody just acknowledge, somebody of Beyonce's stature acknowledge that so openly and just be like, girl, I know it. Like, I felt it too. I know it. And it's, sucks.
Well, and you can also see that really, like, played out in, like, there weren't a lot of, like, in the visual language of the film. Like, not only did she surround herself with a very large variety, and there's also been some criticism in terms of the Black women that she has chose.
Oh, I could see that.
You know, because there weren't many larger women.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of...
Yeah, there weren't.
And it was a lot of, like, the quote-unquote, like, classically, like, in terms of the perception of the women.
I understand what you're saying.
But going back to that, these were all clearly Black women. You know what I'm saying?
What's blacker than Serena Williams twerking? Please, like, tell me.
From the hairstyles to the skin tones to the everything was rooted in this, you know.
Yeah.
In something that was supposed to be clear. Like, not to say that people don't exist on both sides of that spectrum of what was shown.
Yeah.
But it was definitely there to send a message.
Well, yeah, I don't want to let Beyonce off the hook all the way for this, but I will say that she showed a wider representation in body type and age
than you traditionally
see. And also, my thought is like, okay, so Beyonce is, I'd say, a Black woman with the most cultural cachet and, like, access to resources to be able to make a large artistic statement.
Yeah.
I'm sure if more Black women had access to things, we would see more. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I definitely understand the criticism. I agree with it. But also, like, I think she did a damn good job with that. And it's interesting, even now that I really think about it, thinking about Becky, how Becky with the good hair relates to Lil' Kim's face. Like you said, like, having all these Black women, It's kind of like an unspoken, implicit response to, you don't like my black ass?
Yeah.
You don't like my black ass? So, all right, let me go down here to a plantation in Louisiana with all these other black women who have a variety of, you know, a variety of ways that they present. And let me just make the blackest shit that I possibly can.
Yeah, let me hold court.
Let me hold court since you don't like my black ass. Yeah. Like, let me go back into this space that's a healing space for black women. And, like, the thing that's interesting is that because it's preserved on film, actually, if I really think about it, like, film, music, and books are the only healing spaces that ever are preserved for black women because they are narratives that cannot be touched after they are produced. There is no such thing as a safe space for black women that does not eventually include non-black women of color or white women. Because I can almost see a case for bringing in non-black women of color from time to time, even though I would prefer sometimes that there were just specific healing spaces for black women. But yeah, I mean, white women always feel like they have to have lay some claim over my space. Or they're interrupted by black men, which happens like all the time. Constantly. All of the time. But like an album that's been recorded and untouched, a book that's been written and cannot be unwritten or rewritten, a film that's been made and put out there and cannot be re-edited or put out. Like, those are the only long-living healing spaces for black women that exist.
A lot of the spaces where black women do have that power are the arts. You know, we've talked about that before, you know. It is an album. Music is one of the rare spaces where black women have been able to progress relatively unimpeded.
People are actively searching for us to join the discourse.
Exactly. And
one of the only places in the world, like spaces in the world where people are seeking out black women.
And it's also interesting in terms of Beyoncé too herself, because she's been trying to do this before. You know, this isn't her first quote unquote visual album.
Like
she's been trying to move into this other space before. And, you know, whatever, however you feel about the other products, it's clear people were like, man, it didn't really work. You know, no, she's like, no. Like, not only do I need to make music about this, I need to make a film. And she made a film, and it's really exciting to see her be successful in that. Because like you said, it does offer up more spaces, and it makes us more normal.
Yeah.
And because she's Beyoncé, it's going to stick around.
Yeah.
Like, which is cool.
I'm excited because one day I'm going to show it to my kids.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, it's such a cool, it's like something that's, for me, has never existed before. Something that is so, like you said, wide-ranging and all-encompassing and huge and big. And not like, she also took these things that were really niche, like Daughters of the Dust. God bless Julie Dash. Mm-hmm. But Daughters of the Dust is not a film that a lot of people know about.
Yeah.
And she, very lovingly borrowed from that aesthetic and made it bigger.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, made that larger and magnified that and made it something that's accessible to more people. Not everybody has the resources to seek out that film. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And Julie Dash at the time didn't have the resources or the respect to be able to make it a wider release. I like that this is something that's really big and accessible that I can like one day be able to show it to my kids and they're going to be able to like, it's interesting that in this way, you know, obviously it's not going to win any Oscars.
Yeah.
But like in this way, she's been able to contribute. Or maybe, actually, I don't know if they have
HBO's submitting it for an Emmy.
Yeah. It's this, that like she's been able to create a visual that joins the canon, like you say, of like an Eve's Bayou or a Color Purple or a Daughters. Like it's something that like, that's
it's
like
Southern Gothic. It joins the Southern Gothic tradition.
Yeah. And it's something that's like, that I feel like is mine and that is for me. And I never feel like anything is for, I didn't realize how little is for me until I saw this.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about how many goddamn movies exist of white women sitting around talking about getting cheated on, making fucking quilts. I watched one the other day. I love Ellen Burstyn. I watched How to Make an American Quilt a week ago. And it was it's really good. One of my writers in it too, and Alfre Woodard and Maya Angelou. It was cool to see, and their quilt making is like this center. It's like this healing space for white women. Steel Magnolias, healing space for white women.
I mean,
First Wives Club, any of those movies.
Yeah, Fried Green Tomatoes.
Green Tomatoes, exactly. A healing space for black women. They can I love that this was something that was allowed to happen. I'm hoping that kind of extends into real life, because like, and now I think about it, I can understand why Beyoncé really has no desire to speak on it at all, because almost that will taint it. Do you know what I'm saying? Like the discussion around it is already in some places so fucking ugly. And like white women are trying to grab onto it. Black men are trying to grab onto it. I appreciate the fact that she's not speaking on it and that she's like, I made this.
It is what it is.
It is what it is.
Also, just to come back, like a lot of those, like a lot of the movies that we just called out, like are also, I think this is important because a lot of those movies are also directed by men.
Yeah.
Like,
well, not Daughters of the Dust and not Eve's Bayou.
Well, yeah, not those specifically, Color Purple. But like Color Purple, Steel Magnolias, Fried Green Tomatoes, yep. You know, and even with that, like in translating a lot of those narratives to film, mm-hmm. You know, a lot of them have been like sanitized. You know, like it, yeah. With Color Purple and like Fried Green Tomatoes specifically, there was a lot of like lesbian subtext.
Yeah, it became subtext, but like when you read the books, you're like,
yo, it was
pussy's getting eaten.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
So having, you know, having a woman be able to, you know, be responsible for the creation of this allows, like, it's what she wanted.
Yeah, no, it's, know? Yeah.
Like, what came out is what she wanted to come out.
Whoever creates something on HBO and is the sole executive, credited as the sole executive producer.
I do want to come back and just make, like, talk a bit more about the fact that this could not even be real. You know what I'm saying? Like I think it's clear, like we've established like some shit went down.
Yeah.
Like the thing that I like about Beyoncé and about this particular expression of her work is that it's up to her to establish, and this visual album establishes like how much she feels like sharing it and in what way. But there's still a potential like a bit of distance that she could have like to it.
Yeah.
Parts of this could be more real than others, you know? And I wanted to just come back and step on that. Just like one more time.
Yeah.
Because we don't know.
We really don't know.
We don't. I think it's also shows the degree of intention that she has in terms of when she creates.
Yeah.
Because to be able, like, to put so much of yourself in this, mm-hmm. You know, to establish yourself and your husband and your child.
Yeah. Regardless of whether it's true or not, she put them out there. Yeah. Everybody is out there.
Like, they are all, like, his grandmother. Yeah. His grandmother.
It's the very end, yeah.
Like, they are in this film. It is intricately woven within, like, her mythology. And that show, like, whether it's true or not, it shows a level of intention about that artistry,
yeah.
That is fascinating.
I agree. And like something that like Beyonce, even like that she's always been criticized for, among many other things, is just like her lack of vulnerability. And that makes me think of a couple of things. Like she's a perfectionist, but also I also wonder, like, she's a black woman who's not performing struggle. Do you know what I'm saying? For like most
of
the time.
She is now.
Well, she's performing a specific type of struggle that many people can tie themselves to. Okay. But she's a black woman not performing, like when I think of struggle, no shade to this woman because I actually like her. I'm thinking like a Keisha Cole, like, okay. Giving you some Keisha Cole, giving you some, yeah. Even some Phyllis Hyman, giving you some, do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like she's a black woman who's not performing. She's, Beyonce is always the winner. She always comes out on top. Mm-hmm. There are so few contexts in life where I get to see myself as a winner. Or even if I'm successful, my success is typically only measured by that of another black woman. Do you know what I'm saying? I don't even get to always be in the full running, if you catch my drift. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of black women like deal with that. So I like, to some extent, Beyonce is like Teflon Don. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
She's Arnold Schwarzenegger. She's fucking, you know what I'm saying? Like, she's just like, she's that suited up all the time.
Yeah.
But she really was not, like, she was, regardless of whether she's tearing down her own myth or putting her own actual business out there, mm-hmm. She is being vulnerable, and she's being intentionally vulnerable in this way that is really, it's surprising. And even just as somebody who what I create is not the same as what Beyonce creates. But just as a creative person, seeing how intentional she's, like how just fucking expertly executed all of this was.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
So Lemonade was good.
Lemonade was good.
It was, honestly, it was excellent. It reminded me, like, I was telling you this before, like, I feel like this is her experimental album. This is like Rhythm Nation for her. This is like Jagged Little Pill, you know, for her. Like it steps so clearly without the quote unquote boundaries that we would have anticipated that, you know, she has.
Yeah.
But it is a different language for her, and she has jumped so, like, she jumped into it. She killed it. Like,
she killed it. Yeah, no, I agree. It's the most complete artistic statement I've seen anyone in my lifetime musically make. Like, it's I'm serious, it's complete. It's complete. There are no loose ends to this shit. Not on the album, it only has 12 cuts. Not with the film and the way that they fit together. Like, there was not a frame of that shit wasted, and none of the songs are wasted. Like, there's some songs that I love more than others.
Yeah.
But I think that every single song on this album serves a particular purpose. And, you know, I just say, like, fucking bravo.
So, yeah, man, go. If you haven't already, if we haven't sold it for you with this long-ass episode, go and watch and listen to Lemonade and really think about how it makes you feel, what it connects to. But there was a lot. There's so much in this shit.
Yeah.
I could
create a reading list for each of us of different shit and be like, we're going to meet back here in a week. And then have another conversation about what was happening in this shit. Like, but there's not enough that can be said about this fucking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. There's so much here.
Yeah.
And the thing that I will also note is this is different for us specifically, because when we sat down to start doing this show, we very much said we will not be fucking talking about relationships.
But we did. You can't not. I think which kind of shows like how powerful of a piece of art it was, in that whether you like it or not, this shit hit you somewhere.
Yeah.
Like if you've lived, Lemonade hit you somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. This was a lot of fun.
This was a lot of fun. This is good. As always, please, 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 please.
Rate
us and review us on iTunes and subscribe. Tell your friends. Let people know if you like the show. Let us know what you think. You can email us at forcolorednerds@gmail.com.
Yeah. I love it. The email's been really interesting recently.
Email's been good.
Yeah. People who sent some emails who I feel like they're going to hear this episode and be like, damn it.
Yeah, so review us on iTunes. Tell your friends. Thank you for listening. We really, really appreciate it. And we'll be back soon.
We'll be back soon.
Bye.
Bye. Don't hurt yourself.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.